You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey everyone, Tim McMaster here, along with our MLB.com Nationals reporter Jamal Collier. First podcast of 2017. Jamal, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Tim.
Seems like a fitting way to start off the new year as far as the podcast go, with a New Year's resolution. So I'm curious what the Nationals' New Year's resolution should be. In other words, what is something they should be committed to doing in 2017 to make this a successful season and obviously a return to the postseason and hopefully finally a World Series for the Washington Nationals? What is the best resolution the Nationals can kind of commit to right now?
Yeah, and I think that's just it, that the Nationals' kind of number one goal and resolution coming out of this year is to make that kind of elusive deep playoff run. And, you know, they've had obviously these three division titles in the last couple of years. They've all come on even years. Then they've kind of had some kind of odd year letdown. So getting off to a good start would be one way to kind of prevent that and really just being focused on doing whatever it takes necessarily. When they made the trade for Adam Eaton and unloaded the guys that they unloaded the prospects, they kind of put themselves all in. I think that's probably the biggest one, is to kind of stay all in. And to, if it comes at the trade deadline where you really need one more piece, to not be hesitant to pull the trigger on that piece, to kind of just make sure you line everything up here, that you have a team that's ready to be, whether it be finding a closer the next couple of months, this next month and a half or so before spring training, and have a team that's ready to go into the season and compete for the division title and get into the playoffs and then get over that hump this year. So I would kind of say for the Nats, it's kind of all focus and all systems go to make sure that you don't have the same ending that you've had here necessarily on odd years where you kind of missed out in the playoffs, or where you make the playoffs and then kind of have an early exit. I would say to really just be kind of focused on building this team into a real power here, a team that should be one of the favorites in the National League this year.
Dusty Baker, when he was brought in a year ago, Jamal, it was a short, just a two-year deal for Dusty. Obviously,
yeah.
He's no spring chicken at this point. Dusty, soon to be 68 years old. But there is talk now that the team and the manager may be working towards an extension, obviously entering the final year of that two-year deal. Baker had a lot of success in his first season with the Nationals, so this makes a lot of sense. How long do you think he wants to manage as he gets older in life?
He kind of approached the subject back at the winter meetings last month, and he doesn't seem like he's necessarily slowing down, as in like he feels like it's going to be his last year. He mentioned that he's one of the oldest managers in baseball. He kind of hates that fact is always kind of attached to his name, because I don't think he truly feels that he does have multiple years left if he comes down to it. Now Dusty's also a kind of guy who, if things go really well and maybe the next year or two and they win a World Series and he kind of gets things done, then maybe he'd be comfortable walking away as well. But I don't think he's necessarily ready to go out. They were very happy with him last year and the job that he did. He was very happy in D.C., called it his favorite job since he was in San Francisco. He just really it's kind of been a perfect fit so far. And I would think that it makes a whole lot of sense for him to try to figure out something in the next 6 weeks or even in the spring training to kind of get him some kind of extension, so you're not necessarily just playing on one more year and just kind of the troubles that could potentially, you know, give this team. But I think Dusty is going to they'll figure something out here. He didn't seem to be in much of a rush necessarily. He says it'll come when it comes. At this point last month, the Nationals at this point haven't really aggressively necessarily initiated contact with him yet either, as far as getting this done. So I think it's something that we could see done, if not in the next couple of weeks, maybe early on in spring training, for them to kind of get this shored up. But as far as right now goes, both sides are happy with the way things are going. They like each other. So I would assume that Dusty is going to be around here at least for the next couple seasons.
It's interesting that Dusty has obviously had success everywhere he's been. You mentioned San Francisco, Cincinnati as well, going to the postseason. But if there's one complaint against Dusty, it's that he hasn't won a World Series. And obviously the Nationals are a team that's had success and hasn't won a World Series. So in that sense, the club's legacy and Dusty's legacy kind of aligned here, in that if he can finally accomplish that thing, it'll obviously be great for the city as well. But it's interesting, the symmetry there between the Nationals and Dusty Baker.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point that, you know, both obviously the Nationals as a franchise haven't been around as long, at least in D.C. as long, but to just have the kind of close calls that they've had and the clause that Dusty's had, and both these guys are kind of right there. So they were, for a lot of reasons, a perfect fit. They got a lot of players who have a lot of star power. Dusty's, of course, managed stars before. They're right on the cusp kind of knocking on that door. So, it was really, like you said, the fit was just kind of perfect last year for them. The players loved him. They, to a man, kind of raved about just the way he just allows them to be themselves and kind of just relax in that clubhouse. And it's so tough to really, put a finger on how much a manager impacts a team or exactly what, how much better Dusty make them or whatever. But, one thing I can say is that they like him and they like playing for him. And it's a good situation for him as well. He was a guy, obviously, because of his age and because he probably has not got a number of years necessarily to kind of stay in the game. That was a good for him. There was a team that was ready to win and had veterans that had stars that could, he had to kind of put him in the right place and kind of not mess things up necessarily. And he, did a good job coming off of that too. So really, like you said, both sides, it makes a lot of sense. And I would be shocked at this point to see them kind of go and link, have this thing linger on and kind of turn into more of a story, more of a thing that it is already. So just watch why I think they will at some point here before April get this thing kind of settled up.
The amazing thing about Dusty is that we mentioned his age, but he's still that player's manager. The players still love him. He's never lost touch with the players and throughout his career, and that's really what
he ain't slowing down either. Being on the road with him, I mean, there's probably not a GM Mike Rizzo kind of compared it to like traveling with Elvis. That's just a guy who, no matter where he goes, he's got so many people he knows, so many things he wants to do and people to see and everything. So Dusty is still Dusty from where he was, a decade or so ago in San Francisco or Chicago or wherever.
Awesome stuff. All right. You look at this team and what still needs to get done before the start of spring training. And really the biggest hole continues to be the same thing that it was when the offseason started, and that is the closer position in that bullpen. And the Nationals have tried really hard to fill that hole. They haven't been able to do it yet. What are the options at this point, Jamal?
Yeah, in the last couple of weeks, obviously, baseball, the hot stove has kind of cooled off a little bit just around the entire league, as a matter of fact. And, same with the Nationals. They're kind of in a similar position to where they were coming out of the winter meetings. And once Kenley Jansen had signed, where they kind of took their shot at the big guys, the Chapman, the Jansen, Melanson, and those guys obviously went elsewhere. So, they're looking at the guys, of course, in that secondary market, the names we've all heard, and David Robertson or Colome or whomever those guys might be, potentially Greg Holland's a free agent. But, I think right now you're kind of just weighing your options and seeing exactly, do you feel comfortable and start with somebody in-house? And that's just kind of the biggest question, I think, right now is that if they think they have somebody in-house that can fill that role better than, some of the quote-unquote second-tier options out there, I think that they'll go for it and kind of go into some kind of open tryout or something in spring training. But that's the biggest question now. They have to kind of figure out exactly how these pieces fit together. And it's like you said, it was their biggest hole coming into the offseason, and they haven't been able to fix it just yet. So you think that that's going to be what a lot of the focus is for the next couple of weeks.
Is there any thought that if they can't get something done to kind of bring somebody in at this point, that this team's good enough that you can go into the season with those internal options, and then if you're in the race in July, maybe then you can pull the trigger on a better option late in the game?
I think so. I think they would prefer to have somebody who just has some experience because, like we talked about earlier in this podcast, that they are going to be in on this season. And the goal, is I think David Johnson made the World Series or bust, phrase famous a couple of years ago with them. But, I mean, that's pretty much where they are at this point. And to start maybe that kind of year with an inexperienced closer, a guy who's never done it before, is probably not ideal for them. But personally, I think that that's definitely the route that they should go at this point. Just with the guys they have, the names we mentioned, Sean Kelly, and I've been a big kind of proponent for him to get the job or just to have a shot for the job at least because, his strikeouts to walk and whip numbers and everything were kind of right up there with some of the best relief pitchers in the game last year. And, I think they've got the options in-house that can do it. And you kind of look, and every year I feel like that there's somewhere around the All-Star break or middle of season, we're looking up when there's like 10 relievers that are having these like great years, and we're like, who is this guy? So there's just always inevitably somebody that's available, somebody on a team that falls out of the race early, they're willing to move. I mean, there's going to be some kind of options out there that I think that they are becoming more and more, you know, reserved that idea could happen, and they may have to have no choice to do it. But I personally think they have the tools in house that comes down to, and they really don't have another guy that they really feel strongly about acquiring, that they should be all right.
Great stuff, Jamal. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Nationals edition for Jamal Collier. I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Hey, everyone. Tim McMaster here along with our MLB.com Mets reporter, Anthony DiComo. First podcast of 2017. Anthony, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Tim. It's great to be back. New Year means we're getting close to spring training, right? Or at least closer. And that's always a good time.
Yeah, you have to start thinking about packing pretty soon for the trip down to Florida and Port St. Lucie. Let's start, though, with the New Year's theme and talk New Year's resolutions. If the Mets are going to have a successful 2017, what is a New Year's resolution they need to make, something they need to commit to here in the upcoming season?
Well, this is something that they've talked about and have done to a certain extent in past years, but I really think they need to be more aggressive this year. In resting their guys regularly. And that means the pitchers. I think they need to start from the very beginning of the season and make sure that Jacob deGrom and Matt Harvey and all these other guys, even Noah Syndergaard, who's the workhorse of the staff, they need to make sure that these guys are not being overworked, whether that means using six-man rotations more often, more aggressively, whether that means skipping guys when they need to and going six, seven deep on that starting pitching depth chart. And then on the offensive side, it means resting Asdrubal Cabrera, even when he's going well. It means obviously resting David Wright, giving Neil Walker some more time off. These are a lot of guys on this team with injury histories now. And to be successful, the Mets are going to need each and every one of them to be healthy. It's something they have struggled with greatly in years past. And again, they have tried to rest these guys, but I don't think they've been quite aggressive enough in doing it. And to be successful, you need 100% of all of these guys as often as possible, not 80, 70% of these guys, you know, every day when you're trying to run them out there and they might not be at their best.
That also makes sense for the bullpen as well, I think, right? Because in the past, I know just a year ago, early in the season, there was a lot of talk about the fact that Jeyriz Familia was really getting a lot of work and not necessarily in games where he was needed. And then maybe that caught up with him late in the year, although it didn't seem to really catch up with him late because he was pretty good all year long. But eventually, those innings that aren't necessary can certainly catch up with a closer.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, you already have visions, you know, Familia is suspended to begin the year. You have visions of Addison Reed, who pitched a lot of innings last year, getting overused and even abused to a certain extent in April as the closer. So these are the types of things absolutely that you want to avoid, because you need these guys fresh for October. This isn't a team that's a six-month team right now. This is a team that wants to play into October, maybe even into November. So really up and down the roster, throughout the roster. The Mets have created a lot of depth for themselves, which is good, which is by design. They need to use it now. They need to tap into it, and they need to make sure that their key guys, their core guys, stay healthy all year long.
You mentioned the depth, and you have a I know in your mailbag this week, I was catching up on the inbox for Anthony DiComo on MLB on Mets.com, and an interesting question about Jose Reyes and where he fits in if David Wright is healthy. And that speaks to the depth that you're talking about, the fact that when they got Jose Reyes last year, it was to fill a need. But if David Wright is healthy at third base, then that need changes a little bit. And Jose Reyes doesn't necessarily have a set spot in the field to play every day. But he's a guy that I know Terry Collins wants at the top of that lineup every day. So does Jose Reyes become kind of that super utility guy? Is he going to play all over the field for the Mets?
Yeah, I'll use that buzzword again, versatility. That's the key, especially for a guy like Jose Reyes. And, you know, maybe David Wright gets hurt again and Jose Reyes plays 100-plus games at third base. That's certainly realistic. But if you assume that David Wright is healthy and the Mets are sure hoping he will be, then you need to find a spot for Reyes because he's your leadoff hitter. You want him starting off the game for you more often than not. And if he's only playing a couple days a week at third base, that's just not going to cut it. So where do you fill him in? You know, a day a week for Asdrubal Cabrera at shortstop would help. Maybe we see Jose Reyes at second base, or maybe we see Asdrubal slide over to second base and Jose Reyes play a couple of times per week at shortstop. You know, the wild card here, the interesting idea is Jose Reyes in the outfield. It could happen. The Mets are talking seriously about using him out there in spring training in center field and seeing how he does. And, you know, if he's successful there, or even moderately successful, it just gives the Mets another avenue to say, look, this is a way that we can get Jose Reyes in our lineup, leading off games, being that spark at the top of the lineup that we know he can be. If you look up and down the rest of the lineup or the rest of the roster, there aren't a lot of obvious candidates to lead off games for the Mets. Curtis Granderson has done it, but you know, Terry Collins has talked often about he prefers Granderson lower down in the lineup. I think Granderson prefers being lower down in the lineup for the most part. So you want Reyes in there, and it's about versatility for him. It's about versatility for a lot of these guys. If Asdrubal Cabrera you know, is willing to play second base, that helps. If Michael Conforto is willing to play first base or at least try out there, that helps. You can say it about a lot of the guys on this roster. I think it's a key for a Mets team that, again, is very deep in their bench, in their bullpen now, in their rotation, certainly. How do you use that depth? How do you turn it from, you know, a traditional bench where you have your eight starters and these guys fill in to maybe more of a mix and match thing where everyone's involved and everyone's contributing?
About 6 weeks to go until spring training, until at least pitchers and catchers get going down in Port St. Lucie. So still time to get some things done as far as the hot stove season goes. So as we get into the new year, Anthony, I'd love to hear a bold prediction for the rest of the offseason when it comes to the New York Mets. Not necessarily something that you think will happen, but something that maybe could happen and would really be a big story for the Mets, a bold prediction for the rest of the offseason.
Well, the biggest name that's going to be moved, and maybe it's not as that bold, but Jay Bruce will be traded. I've been saying that since really the day that Cespedes is signed. It hasn't happened yet. I think there's some thought that maybe it won't happen because we are getting into mid-January now and things have been pretty slow across baseball on the hot stove front. But make no mistake, the Mets are working on this thing. They don't have room for Jay Bruce. They want to clear that salary. They want to really just finalize their outfield in that sense. And they need to trade Jay Bruce. They will trade Jay Bruce. I think the return is the bold part. And, you know, there is some thought that maybe this ultimately just turns into a salary dump type trade. I'll say no. You know, I think Sandy Alderson has kind of earned the benefit of the doubt on these trades where he gets more than people think he's going to get in a lot of times. I don't think this is going to wind up just being a salary dump. You get a couple of C-level prospects for Jay Bruce. No, I think you're going to get an impact big league reliever or an impact prospect. It can be one of the two, I think. Some team will wake up this month and say, hey, look, this is a 30 home run bat that's just out there. Doesn't cost all that much. And at that point, you will see Jay Bruce move away from the Mets.
And that fits right into when you look at needs still to be done for the Mets. Relief help is, at this point, kind of the big thing, right? This team still needs some help in that bullpen.
Absolutely. And they've been waiting really for this Jay Bruce domino to fall all offseason. And granted, the relief market doesn't always shake out completely until this time of year, but we're in January now, and this is when these B-level, C-level relievers that the Mets are looking at do sign. So, you know, the Mets have been waiting to trade Jay Bruce, clear that salary, see how much they have to work with their payroll, and then sign a reliever or two. Maybe they can't wait much longer. Maybe they have to sign a reliever before trading Jay Bruce, but I do think sooner rather than later, you are going to see Bruce go. You're going to get that money off the books, and then you're going to look up and you're going to finish your offseason by saying, okay, let's sign this guy, let's sign this guy, done. Let's go to spring training and have a good season.
And that would certainly be a successful offseason for this Mets team. Of course, goal number one was to bring back Yoenis Cespedes, and they managed to do that. So everything else is gravy to a degree. My question is, when you look at what the Mets have done this offseason, which is at least, I think, stay as good as they were a year ago with Cespedes back in the fold, and you hope to be healthier on the pitching staff. You look at what the Nationals have done this offseason. Sure, they brought in Adam Eaton, but at the cost of some pitching depth, and they haven't filled the hole in the back of their bullpen. Can you make an argument right here in early January that maybe heading into spring training, as the rosters sit right now, the Mets are the favorites again in the NL East, or do you still give that nod to the Nationals?
You can make that argument, Tim. I think, you know, the Nationals are reigning division champions. They've got a pitching staff that's one of the few in the league that can rival the Mets. They've got a lineup that on paper I would say is better than the Mets. They have questions in their bullpen, but so do the Mets. So, you know, until proven otherwise, I think the Nationals have kind of earned that right to be considered the division favorites. Beyond that, I think what's interesting, what's happening in the NL East is, you know, you've got a division that last year was a bad division. You had a couple of teams in the Braves and Phillies that were in full-on rebuilding mode. You had a Marlins team that was disappointing, was a lot of people's preseason, you know, pick to click, but didn't really happen that way. I think across the board, pretty much, every team has gotten stronger. The Nationals have at least held course with what they're doing. The Mets are kind of have the same team that they had in 2016. And the Marlins obviously lost Jose Fernandez on unfortunate circumstances, but you know, are trying to improve themselves in other areas. Phillies have gotten better. Braves have gotten better. So the road is going to be tougher for the Mets in the NL East this season, and they did a lot of what they did last season by beating up on the Phillies, by beating up on the Braves, by beating up on some of the bad teams around the league, which is what good teams do. But that's going to be more difficult to do this year, especially in the NL East. And the Mets are going to have to really up their game if they want to compete with the Nationals, because that team down in Washington does look pretty good on paper, and I would say is still the favorite in the NL East.
Yeah, no longer really a division of the haves and the have-nots. Certainly a little more parity heading into 2017. And that makes for more fun season. And certainly things get more interesting when you talk about the wild card late in the season. It'll be a lot of fun. That's going to do it for this edition of MLB.com Extras, our Mets edition. For Anthony DiComo, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Hey, everyone. Tim McMaster here, along with our MLB.com Marlins reporter, Joe Frisaro. Joe, Happy New Year as we kick off the 2017 podcast campaign.
Oh, Happy New Year to Tim, to you, and to all the listeners, and let's hope for a happy, healthy, and a safe 17.
Yeah, seems like a good place to start is with New Year's resolutions, and I'd like your take on what the Marlins' New Year's resolution should be. If this team is going to be competitive in 2017, what do they need to commit to right now?
Yeah, I think kind of I'm going to go with the focal point in the organization and the guy who's still in many people's eyes the face of the franchise, Giancarlo Stanton. The resolution, if they could keep him on the field, Tim. I mean, since 2012, just once he has played 145 or more games, 119 games in 16, 74 games in 15. And so if you could come somehow keep Stanton on the field, that would be a very good start to 17, or you know, it would certainly set a good tone for 17 if they knew that they could get Stanton on the field anywhere north of 140 games, because just the power will be off the charts, because it's always been off the charts.
Health will obviously be a big key for this Marlins team overall. And another guy that they could use healthy all year long is Justin Bour at first base. And I think it was kind of an assumption maybe, Joe, that in some way he would be platooned again at first base. He's been so successful last year. He was really off to a great start before the injury. But now it sounds like the Marlins may give him a chance to bat no matter who's on the mound. Is that more and more likely?
Yes and no, Tim. Michael Hill, the president of baseball ops, you know, kind of opened the door by saying that they are not necessarily heavily looking for an established right-handed bat. You know, Mike Napoli has been out there, but the Marlins just have not shown any interest. Chris Carter continues to be out there. Again, no interest. And you know, I think they probably will, you know, obviously get somebody, because you never know if Justin's going to be able to hit left-handed pitching, because he doesn't have a big track record of doing so. I think only like 103 career at-bats, you know, like 30 last year, and no career homers against lefties. And, you know, they've already talked about JT Realmuto, the catcher, playing some first base against lefties when A.J. Ellis, he's being a little more of an offensive catcher than to have with Jeff Mathis. So a good way to kind of get, you know, a second right-handed bat and take advantage of JT. But, you know, the eyes are going to be on Justin to see what he can do against left-handed pitching. And I think part of the thinking, Tim, is, you know, last year they had Chris Johnson, and there's still a chance they could bring CJ back, but the it doesn't sound like they want to throw guaranteed money at that spot, at least at this time. So, and plus, even last year, CJ had 5 home runs last year. So they had 21 home runs from their first base position, and 15 were from Bohr, who played in, I believe, 90 games exactly. So they're not getting a ton of production from that right-handed bat anyway in terms of power. So I think they're going to want to see, how Justin does against certain left-handers. Obviously, I think the Kershaw types would probably lead to a day off for Bohr. But, you know, if he can show the ability to, you know, to do anything against left-handers, that's a big threat. And as we see, you know, starters are in the game for only so long, and then they come out. If they could get 2 or 3 at-bats and Justin, you know, uses the whole field, which he has been doing more of, you know, this is a big, strong guy. I mean, he was well on his way to 20 homers last year. As you noted, you know, he finished with 15 home runs, and he had all 15 by July 2nd. You know, he came back in September 6th. He didn't hit one the rest of the year. And, you know, so this guy is a big-time threat and, you know, a guy that they're going to be counting on. So I'm sure their thinking is, let's see what he can do against outfalls. And maybe, I still believe they probably will sign someone before spring training, or certainly if it looks like it's, you know, a situation that they might get somebody certainly by opening day. But I think they're looking for versatility in that role. I don't think it specifically has to be a Chris Johnson type who they thought would be an automatic first base, you know, start when a tough lefty's on the mound.
A healthy Bohr and a healthy Stanton will certainly produce more runs for this team, you would think. But you were written on Marlins.com, Joe, about maybe a change in philosophy that away from maybe some of the things that Barry Bonds taught. I mean, no question he had a good impact on a lot of batters in this lineup. But are the Marlins maybe changing their philosophy to score runs in different ways?
Yeah, and I think a good part of that, too, is, Tim, look at the age we're in. I mean, look at MLB.com and the growth of StatCast and just the information at our fingertips. And you know, this sport, you better be paying real close attention to data. And I'm not sure Barry was totally doing that. That's not to say their game plans weren't fine, but as soon as the starters got out of the game, it seemed like they didn't have a plan for relievers. So I think you're going to be looking at, you know, an emphasis on launch angles and an emphasis on, you know, how you're being pitched to certain zones. They're already talking a lot about that, and you can see the charts on every player on the website, how a guy hits in the ball in a certain zone. And I think that's the philosophy. And in Pagliarulo, he's a grinder, you know, and he's going to be, you know, kind of that guy who's going to be really preaching that. And Frankie Minichino's back too, and you know, Frankie's been with these guys, and so, you know, since 13, and you know, so I think you're going to see, you know, just kind of that. This is a big ballpark that it's hard to hit the ball out of, but, you know, they're really going to emphasize, you know, the gaps and try to, you know, see if they get guys to buy into those extra base hits and worry about, you know, the long ball, you know, when they catch it good. But I think that's the way they're going to look at it. Not necessarily they're going to go small ball per se or whatever, but I think they're looking for just to provide as much information to the batters as possible. And that information is endless. You know, these guys are on their computers, it seems like, as much as some of us, you know, looking, but there's so much data there. And I think that's kind of what Mike Pagliarulo is going to bring in, just kind of a reinforcement that they're being pitched a certain way. They're strong here, they're not so strong here, and look at the totality of hitting. And I think that's kind of a change we're seeing in the industry in general.
The Marlins had some clear needs heading into the offseason. They've added to the bullpen. They didn't get the big guy at the back of the bullpen that they were originally after, but they added some talented depth and went that route. They've also added Edinson Volquez, Jeff Locke to the rotation. What's left to be done between now and when pitchers and catchers report?
Yeah, not a lot, Tim. I mean, you know, they basically, you know, I still believe they'll get a right-handed bat. Now that bat could be someone that plays some outfield, and it could be like a Francoeur, let's say, who could play outfield and has already expressed an interest in playing some first base. So I think that, you know, they literally, you know, they have under guaranteed contract 6 relievers. Now, they've hinted that they may go with 13 pitchers and 12 position players. I'm not sure that's the greatest strategy for Mattingly. Maybe the first month that could work because it really, you know, shortens his bench. But, you know, I think that, you know, they still could add a reliever, but if it's a guaranteed contract, then you're going in the camp, barring an injury, with guys like Nick Wickren, who pitched a lot of games, a pretty good reliever, having really no chance of making the opening day roster. And I've never seen the team in the 15th, 16th year now covering this team that they've ever had one area outside of, you know, starters or so there, you say there's no competition. You know, so I would be a little surprised if they signed a guaranteed contract to a reliever, maybe a left-hander, but they didn't seem to be that interested. You know, again, going to data that, you know, if you got Brad Ziegler in the eighth and Tozawa and, you know, Phelps in the seventh and Barraclough in the sixth or however you want to do it, you're not going to pull one of those guys out or pretty good just because Bryce Harper came up. You know, you still like Barraclough against Harper probably more than, you know, a guy that's not a high-end, you know, lefty specialist. So, you know, you could see, you know, a starting pitcher, you know, someone with a track record. I think if the dollars really fall on somebody, which is possible, I think you could see the Marlins getting a starting pitcher and, you know, another arm for depth, but I'm not sure that's going to be, you know, a guaranteed spot in the roster. As well as, you know, a couple of position players that, you know, if could play half the year in New Orleans and half the year up here, I think that's what they're going to be looking to be as strong organizationally as possible because, you know, they hung tough as we, you know, we talked a lot about last year, but about mid-August when the attrition finally caught up, that's when the foundation started to crack. But this was a playoff caliber team, and certainly the standings, they were there up until that mid-August when things got bad. So I think it's going to be more, not the big name signings, but the type of signings that you might say, man, that was a pretty shrewd move that they made. And, you know, they got this guy, and that guy was pretty good, and, you know, they're using him right, and they're getting production.
The Marlins have announced their non-roster invites for spring training, and some interesting names on the list, Joe. Who stands out to you as some guys who, while they're not headed to spring training with a guaranteed job, could have an impact on the Marlins in 2017?
Yeah, a couple of former Dodgers. You know, it's Stephen Fife, who had Tommy John surgery in October of 14. You know, he pitched for Mattingly. He's a guy who has been a starter. He could be intriguing. And Javi Guerra, who had 30 saves for the Dodgers and was the closer before Jansen replaced him. I believe he got hit by a comebacker and it kind of changed his career. And I think he also had a suspension mixed in there as well. But, you know, this guy has been a closer in the big leagues and it could be interesting, those two guys having, you know, pitch for Donnie and, you know, having some measures of success in L.A. And then, you know, Matt Dendecker, you know, he's an interesting guy because he's been in the division with the Mets and the Nationals. And, you know, Tyler Moore, who's a right-handed hitting first base option, that might be a guy who opens in New Orleans. And if there's an injury or if he catches fire and gets himself up to the big leagues, he could see time off the bench. So, you know, some of those guys caught my attention.
Good stuff, Joe. As always, again, Happy New Year. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Marlins edition. For Joe Fusaro, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Hey, everyone, Tim McMaster here, along with our MLB.com Braves reporter, Mark Bowman. First podcast of 2017. Mark, Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you.
So let's start right there, Mark. I want a New Year's resolution for these Atlanta Braves. Obviously, they're a team that looks to be on the rise. So what's something that the Braves need to commit to in 2017 if they're going to continue to get better and succeed?
Well, let's see here. You know, they at least ended 2016 in a positive manner. They were heading the right way. So it might have been much easier to make a strong resolution back when, you know, they were struggling so much there throughout most of last year. I think the resolution has to be stick with the plan, though. I mean, they've done the right thing in terms of putting a better product on the field for the first year here at SunTrust Park by, you know, adding some of these veteran starters with Dickey, Colon, and Garcia. But at the same time, I think that they can't lose sight of everything that they've tried to do here over the last few years. And by that, I'm saying do not block these young pitchers. You know, make sure that they, if it comes a point in time where they need to flip Garcia or Colon or Dickey at some point just to make room for you know, Aaron Blair, Matt Whistler, Patrick Weigel, Max Fried, Sean Newcomb, one of these guys, if they're knocking on the door and there's nothing more for them to prove there at the minor league level, get them up here, allow them to deal with their growing pains, just so that you don't go into 2018 saying, okay, well, you know, these guys are going to go through some growing pains here, because it's inevitable. It will happen. I think it's just when it's time to get these guys up here, don't lose sight of the big picture of trying to build for sustained success beyond this year. While you want to be successful this year, you want to compete for a 500 record, don't lose sight of all of a sudden these guys are on one-year deals, the veterans. They're gone next year, and then you go through the growing pains again next year when, you know, maybe, you know, in some other areas you are better prepared to win, you know, from an offensive perspective, or maybe your bullpen's better rounded at that point in time. Just don't lose sight of the big picture is my resolution.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense for this team and the position they're in right now. All right, we got a little over a month, basically, maybe 6 weeks until pitchers and catchers report down to Florida, Mark. So between now and then, not a lot of time left as far as the offseason goes. How about a bold prediction? What could the Braves do between now and the start of spring training that would really surprise people?
You know, I think that the one thing that may pop up here in the next couple weeks with Matt Wieter still being available, and the Braves obviously could use some improvement there at catcher. I think you will hear some scuttlebutt about Wieters, but at the same time, I think that if we're going to really make a bold prediction, Wieters is not going to come here for what the Braves are willing to offer, which is basically a one-year bargain basement deal at this point in time. So if we want to make a bold prediction, let's go right back to where we've been back in November and early part of December and look at Chris Archer. And, you know, the likelihood of this happening before the start of the season, you know, might not be great, but at the same time, let's go ahead and say the Braves get to camp and they say, hey, look, we really like our offense. We like the way the bullpen's shaping up. If we just get this one more piece, you know, this is going to make all the difference. So at some point they convince the they're not going to have to convince the Rays, because the Rays are the Rays have all the leverage here. But they convince themselves that, hey, look, it's worth giving up a few of our top prospects to go get Chris Archer, get that attractive contract, that team friendly contract, you know, for lack of a better word, and get this guy in here to be the, you know, whether he's a legit ace or not, we'll see. But at the same time, if you pair him and Julio Teheran and then some of these other guys that I mentioned earlier with Patrick Weigel and Sean Newcomb, Max Fried, some of these guys that are legit number ones, and some of those are still a couple years away when we look at the Colby Allards and the next wave coming after that, you start pairing them together, there might be that attraction. The attraction might be significant enough to allow them to part ways with a few guys that they haven't been willing to do so thus far during this winter.
It would certainly be interesting to see which of those number of guys you just mentioned would have to be included in a Chris Archer deal. But that would certainly jumpstart this rebuild and take us to the next level to suddenly have that top-of-the-line starter in the mix with everything else. Right now on Braves.com, you got some great stuff, Mark, including a story about Adonis Garcia and really how far he's come in a brief amount of time as far as third base goes. And part of that is just because it's really not another option at this point. So it seems like Garcia, he's going to be the guy unless they go out and they make a move here between now and the start of spring training. How confident are the Braves that he can get it done? And how big a factor was the fact that he was demoted last year to AAA in his turnaround?
It was magical how that happened. I kind of spelled that out in the story. But kind of, I can't remember exactly which day it was. There was a three-game series there in New York, but Bo Porter takes him out to left field, says, here, we're going to hit you fly balls or whatever. We're going to, you know, get some extra work out here. You're going to learn this position because, you know, right now you're proving that you can't play third base. His defensive metrics were historically bad. You know, even if it was just a small sample size at that point in time, there was plenty of indication he couldn't play the position. So they were looking for the option to have him play left field, and he basically said, I'm not doing it. And they said, okay, you're going to the minors. You're going to play left field down there then. And he plays left field for 3 weeks, you know, basically 17 games, a little more than 2 weeks at least worth of playing time down there, and comes back, doesn't play left field at all, and miraculously becomes at least serviceable at third base. He's not a gold glove winner or doesn't even resemble one in any stretch of the imagination, but at the same time, you know, he proved serviceable enough there, continued to hit, you know, at a spot where, you know, he's been a cleanup hitter. He began last year as a cleanup hitter. This year, you know, you could toy with lineups. He's not going to hit above the seventh spot, I don't think. So he all of a sudden, he's the seventh or eighth hitter in your lineup. If he provides the production he did, you know, during the second half of last year and when he came up in 2015, that's a nice bat to have. And plus, they have some options there at third base. They have Sean Rodriguez, Jace Peterson, or Chase Darnot could all play the position. And then you also have Rio Ruiz, who really, you know, redirected his career. Here's a guy who was a highly touted prospect. He wasn't in the best shape, maybe lost some baby fat over the last year or so. Proved to be a pretty good hitter, especially against right-handed pitching at the AAA level. He's knocking on the door, and you have some other guys coming. You know, Austin Riley still a couple years away, Kevin Maitana, whether he becomes a third baseman. There are options, but for right now, at least Garcia, the way he played the second half last year, he provides that bridge towards the future because, you know, this is certainly an important position to fill on a long-term basis, whether Rio Ruiz proves to be that guy, Austin Riley, or ultimately Kevin Maitán remains to be seen. But it's nice to the club to have some comfort to know that they could put Garcia out there on a consistent basis next year with the hope that, you know, defensively and offensively, he performs like he did the last 4 months with this past season.
Barring a shocking move like, for instance, trading for Chris Archer or signing a Matt Wieters, in your mind, is this Braves team pretty much done as far as the offseason and what they need to get done? I mean, another position where they could improve is what we just talked about, third base, but it seems like that's not going to happen. So is this team kind of just waiting at this point for pitchers and catchers to report?
I think the one area, I think you can always find an area where you think you can get better. You mentioned some of them there, but one part of that bullpen, there are a lot of big arms there. You've got your late innings. You know, you feel pretty good about what you have in the latter part of the game there with Cabrera, Ramirez, Johnson, Rowe, and even Ian Kroll. But now all of a sudden, let's look at if you project that makeup of that bullpen. Ian Kroll's your only lefty in the bullpen. Now you look at his splits last year. Yes, he was an effective pitcher, but he wasn't necessarily that effective guy against left-handed hitters. So if you wanted to get a left-handed specialist, if there's somebody that develops in camp that you want to take a chance on, that's fine. They brought Eric O'Flaherty back, but he, you know, he's had so many injury problems. On a minor league deal here, I don't really see him as a viable option right now, unless he just suddenly is, you know, regains everything that he had before his elbow started becoming such a problem. I think that's the one area I'd say is maybe find a left-handed reliever, but those aren't necessarily easy to find. Sometimes you got to take a chance on a guy and you get lucky. And if you don't find that left-handed reliever, now all of a sudden you got to hope that you got enough right-handers with some off-speed stuff that can be effective enough against lefties. Because, like I said, Ian Kroll was an effective reliever last year, but if you look at those splits, you know, he's not that guy that you definitely want to bring up. You know, bring in the seventh or eighth inning of a tight spot right there to match up against another team, Bryce Harper or another tough lefty.
Thanks for tuning in to MLB.com Extras, our Braves edition. For Mark Bowman, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Hey, everyone, Tim McMaster here along with our MLB.com Phillies reporter Todd Zalecki. And first of all, Todd, Happy New Year as we officially get into 2017. Thanks for joining us once again.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We're going to start on that theme as we get back to the hot stove season with the Phillies. And exactly what should the Phillies' New Year's resolution be? And what I mean by that is what What do the Phillies need to do here in the next few months or once the season starts to make 2017 a successful campaign on the baseball field? What would you say their New Year's resolution needs to be?
Well, I think the biggest thing would be seeing these prospects develop. But if I was going to get to something specific on the field, I think a great New Year's resolution for the Phillies would be to improve their on-base percentage. They were 29th in baseball last season in on-base percentage. And it's a number, quite frankly, you know, obviously that needs to go up dramatically in 2017 if the Phillies are going to take a step forward. Because that the offense really held them back last year. They were after that 24-17 start, and that was all because of some really good starting pitching. But once the starting pitching kind of fell apart and some pitchers got hurt, et cetera, they just did not have the offense to keep them in any games. So, you know, it starts with a guy like Freddie Galvis. He was last in baseball and on base percentage. You know, Tommy Joseph had a nice September. If he can keep that up, that'd be a good sign. So you look at around the lineup, the Phillies actually improved in September in that department. They had a team on base percentage of 324. If they could do that over the course of the entire season, it would have ranked 12th in baseball last year. So they showed some signs in September of turning it around. But if they can do that, you know, the trick is doing it over the course of a six-month season. But that's something that really does need to improve because it just got to be really hard for these starting pitchers. You know, they basically felt that he needed to go out and throw a, you know, a shutout or, you know, give up a one run or two runs to have a chance at all of staying in a game that last year.
Yeah, and that's the last thing you need on the minds of young pitchers is that they can't make a mistake. There needs to be a little leeway there for the young pitching. Speaking of the starting rotation, and they've added Clay Buchholz now during the offseason, and Jeremy Hellickson obviously coming back. So there's kind of your couple of veteran guys to go with, obviously, all these youngsters. Is there more work to be done? Do they need to add another starter before the beginning of spring training, or are they good with what they have right now?
I think they're good with what they have right now. In fact, I was a little surprised that they got Clay Buchholz because indications I had received in talking to people in the organization were, you know, they have so many young starting pitchers in the system and on the 40-man roster that they might want to just turn those guys loose and see, you know, kind of who sinks or swims. But now that they have Hellickson and Buchholz as the two veterans in the rotation, you have Jared Eichhoff in there for sure. You have Vince Velasquez in there for sure. And right now, I'd say Aaron Nola is a heavy favorite to be the, I guess you'd say, the number five starter. I don't know if remains to be seen how it's going to shake out through spring training. But Aaron Nola is a heavy favorite, in my opinion, for that fifth and final job, assuming that he is healthy and he returns to form. You know, he finished last season on the disabled list with an injured right elbow. He pitched in the Instructional League last fall in Clearwater, Florida. The Phillies sent him home. They said he is absolutely fine. We're super optimistic about him. If that's the case, I almost just don't see how he doesn't get that fifth starter's job. But then you look behind him, you have Jake Thompson, Alec Asher, Zach Eflin, Adam Morgan. You have two top prospects in Ben Lively, who is their minor league pitcher of the year, Nick Pivetta, who they got in the Jonathan Papelbon trade a couple years ago. So they have a lot of young pitchers in the system. Mark Appel, who's coming back from an elbow injury. So a lot of these guys, they have a lot of depth. So I think right now with Buchholz and Hellickson, you know, as the two veterans, I think they're going to stick with what they have and just hope that some of these young guys step up this year.
Yeah, plenty of quantity. It's time they found out about the quality. And some of it was certainly there a year ago. We'll see how it goes the rest of the way. So when you look at the hot stove season overall here, there's still 6 weeks or so to go before pitchers and catchers are going to report down to Clearwater, Florida. Are the Phillies just sitting back at this point and waiting for the first pitch to be thrown in Clearwater, or is there something they still need to add to this roster?
Well, I think they would still like to add a bat. And, you know, I was on MLB Network a couple weeks ago, and I mentioned that Brandon Moss makes a lot of sense. And then John Heyman reported that the Phillies have some interest in not only Moss, but Michael Saunders. So remains to be seen if they can get a deal done with either of those two guys. But Moss, to me, has made sense for a long time for this reason. He can play left field, he can play right field, and he can play some first base. He can kind of platoon at first base a little bit with Tommy Joseph, or at least give him a break. So I think if he can play left field, right field, first base, he could get enough bats. He's got some power, which the Phillies really sorely need, and just gives them a little bit more depth. And he might be available or might be willing to come to the Phillies maybe on a one-year deal because he really faded hard last year with the Cardinals. I think he was like – he finished like 10 for 106, and his OPS went from like 930 to 780 in the course of a month. So he really took a hard fall in his final month with the Cardinals. So, you know, his versatility and the possibility you could get him on a short-term deal just screams Phillies to me, you know, with what they're trying, what they've been trying to accomplish this offseason. And again, like I said, the power they could bring to that middle of that lineup and maybe give Michael Franco a little bit of protection.
You mentioned when it comes to the starting rotation, finding out who sinks and who swims. Is that kind of a theme for 2017 for this entire roster? It's time to really find out, when you look at the next Phillies team that's going to contend and going to be in the playoffs, who are the guys that are going to be the core of that team?
Yeah, I think so. I asked Andy McPhail that question a couple weeks ago, and he says, you know, he would never put a time frame on it because he says different players develop at different times, so you don't want to just say, all right, by the end of the year, we have to know who's going to be part of our future, which I understand. You know, some players do develop. It might click for Nick Williams, a year after J.P. Crawford, for instance. But that said, certainly the goal this year is to have a much better idea of who can play and who cannot play, because I think they're going to hit that free agent market beginning next season, next off season. So, for instance, they really love Cesar Hernandez at second base. They like Freddie Galvis at shortstop, but the number two prospect in all of Major League Baseball is J.P. Crawford. He's going to start the season in AAA. J.P. Crawford starts the season in AAA, hitting the ball well. If it just looks like he absolutely needs to be promoted, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Freddie Galvis and what happens to Cesar Hernandez. Does Freddie Galvis move to second base? Does Freddie Galvis become a utility infielder? Stuff like that. You know, who's going to be the right fielder? Roman Quinn could be the opening day right fielder. Could be Aaron Altherr. You know, if one of those guys takes the job and runs with it, great. If not, then you have Nick Williams. You have Dylan Cousins in AAA. You have a lot of options. So I think by the end of the year, they want to have a clear picture, because then once they know, you know, J.P. Crawford's the real deal, or, hey, wow, Tommy Joseph hits 35 home runs, you know, now we don't need to look for a first base, but now they can maybe spend some money in the rotation or in the bullpen or in the outfield, et cetera. So, you know, that's kind of the goal this year is understanding that while guys develop at different times, that they should have a much better idea of, who's going to be a part of the future and who's not going to be a part of the future.
Yeah, and the 2017 offseason heading into 2018 could certainly be a lot of fun for Phillies fans as the Phillies open up the wallets again, hopefully, as this team gets back to contending in the next couple of years. All right, great stuff as always, Todd. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Phillies edition. For Todd Zielecki, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.